भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। How many of you were there yesterday for the Gurukul function at the new land? Did you all like the land? Actually, with Krishna's grace, it was a very nice program. We had called some important dignitaries and they all agreed to help us to do the needful. And we are hopeful that very soon that location will be easily accessible and will be a very fit place for taking care of the cows and having a nice educational institution that can accommodate 1,000 kids. Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 5, Chapter 6, Text 3. Tada choktam na kurya kariche sakyam manasi yana vasite ya vishramba chirat chirnam chakshanda tapa Aishwaram. Hare Krishna. Na kuryat karchit sakhyam manasi yana vasthite yad vishramba chirak chirnam chaskanda tapa Aishwaram. Na kuryat karchit sakhyam manasi yana vasthite yad vishramba chirak chirnam chaskanda tapa Aishwaram. Manasi in the mind. He certainly. Anabhasthite, which is very restless. Ya, in which. Vishrambha. From placing too much faith. Chiran. For a long time. Charanam. Practiced. Chaskanda. Became disturbed. Tapa. The austerity. Aishwaram. Of great personalities. Like Lord Shiva. And the great sage. Subhari. So what is restless? Oh, okay. Yes, sir. That's what. Translation. All the learned scholars have given their opinion. The mind is by nature very restless, and one should not make friends with it. If we place full confidence in the mind, it may cheat us at any moment. Even Lord Shiva became agitated upon seeing the Mohini form of Lord Krishna. And Subhari Muni also fell down from the mature stage of yogic perfection. Purport. Purport by Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivinoda Swami Srila Prabhupada. Srila Prabhupada ki. The first business of one trying to advance in spiritual life is to control the mind and senses. As Sri Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, Mame Vamsa Jiva Loke Jiva Bhuta Sanatana. Although they are living entities and part and parcels of the Supreme Lord and are therefore in a transcendental position, they are still suffering in this material world and struggling for existence due to the mind and the senses. To get out of this false struggle for existence and become happy in the material world, one has to control the mind and senses and be detached from material conditions. One should never neglect austerities and penances. One should always perform them. Lord Vishwadev personally showed us how to do this. In the Srimad Bhagavatam, it is specifically stated, Matra Svasha Duhitra Va Nivilaga Bhavet. A Grihastha, Vanaprastha, Sannyasi and Brahmachari should be very careful when associating with women. One is forbidden to sit down in a solitary place, even with one's mother, sister or daughter. In our Krishna conscious movement, it has become very difficult to disassociate ourselves from women in our society, especially in Western countries. We are therefore sometimes criticized, but nonetheless, we are trying to give everyone a chance to chant the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra and thus advance spiritually. If we stick to the principle of chanting the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra offenselessly, then by the grace of Srila Haridas Thakur, we may be saved from the allurement of women. However, if we are not very strict in chanting the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, we may at many times fall victim to women. Om Ajnanta Vinandasya Jnananjana Shakya Chakshur Mitaniya Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manovesta Sadhidame Namaha Paramahamsa. Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Yuta Padakamlan Shri Guru Vaishnavamsa Shri Rupam Sagatta Sahagana Raghunatham Vitam Samsadevam Sadvetam Samadhutam Vrijana Saitam Krishna Chaitanya Shri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Dalita Shri Vishakhanitamsta Hey Krishna Karuna Sindhu
Dinabandhu Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Tapta Kanchana Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Vishabhama Sutre Pranamami Vancha Kalpa Kalvyasya Kripa Sindhu Vayavacha Vaitanam Pavanevyo Vaishnavyo Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Hare Krishna Na kuryat karichet sakhyam manasi yena vastite yad vishrambat chirak chernam chakshanda tapa eshwaram. Hare Krishna. Can you hear me clearly in the back? No? You can't hear in the back? They're saying no. They're signaling no. You can't hear. Maybe you can come. Huh? Little louder. I have a bad throat. Hare Krishna, can you hear me now? Maharaj says if you go any louder, then people in the front may have ear problems.
Come in the middle, come in the middle.
The GBC body passed a resolution this year. The sound should be controlled. Okay. The Bhagavatam is so kind. It is guiding us in everything. So we are reading the activities of Lord Rishabhdev. This is the sixth chapter of the fifth canto. And in the previous chapters, you read about Lord Rishabhdev's teachings. Who was Lord Rishabhdev? None else but the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Rishabh in Sanskrit means the best. His father's name was King Nabhi and his mother's name was Meru Devi. So King Nabhi and Meru Devi were engaged in a very long sacrifice, and their desire was to have a son like God. The Lord was so pleased, he said, "You want a son like me? Impossible. I'll become your son." And the Lord became his son. Rishabh in Sanskrit means the best. So in the previous chapters, you read about Lord Rishabhdev's instructions, including the famous verse, Nayam Deha Deha Bhajam Niloke. Prabhupada often quoted the verse. And in this chapter, we're going to read about the activities of Lord Rishabhdev. In the previous verse, Lord Rishabhdev has said, in the previous verse, Shukadeva Goswami has said that a hunter, he captures an animal. Then he tells the animal, "Okay, you sit down here. I'll go and capture a few other animals." Is that what they do? The cops, when they catch a big terrorist or a thief, do they say, "Okay, you sit here, be a good boy. We'll go and catch some more thieves and come." Is that what they do? Yeah? No, what do they do? Tie him down. A cunning hunter, when he catches an animal, he ties him down. So, what is being emphasized here is that we should control the mind. If you don't control the mind, spiritual success will be very difficult. For example, the Bhagavatam is saying, all the learned scholars have given their opinion. So this is not just some ordinary person. We tend to think when the word scholar is used, it refers to people who have PhD degrees and so on. But over here, learned scholar means learned sages. So what have the learned sages said? They have given their opinion. What is their opinion? The mind is by nature very restless. Who is that famous personality who said the mind is restless? Huh? Where? Which chapter? Okay. So in the sixth chapter, Krishna discusses the principles of Dhyana Yoga. Krishna says one should make friends with the mind. When is the mind considered to be a friend? When the mind is thinking of spiritual activities. And when is the mind considered to be your enemy? When the mind is thinking of the opposite. Now on the same theme, the verse today is explaining that by nature the mind is very restless. Arjuna said, Chanchalai Mana Krishna. Oh Krishna, this mind is so restless, turbulent, very restless, very strong, so strong that you know that something is wrong. Still you go ahead and do it. The mind is technically to be working under the intelligence. But the mind is so strong, it overpowers the intelligence. So therefore, the learned sages are saying, don't make friends with it. In other words, if the mind is telling you something detrimental for spiritual advancement, don't follow. But the mind is telling you, come on, increase your service to Krishna Balaram. And you want to do that, then it's okay. So when it says don't make friends, it is mainly talking about making friends with a restless, turbulent, uncontrollable mind. If the mind is in control, like Amrish Maharaj says, Sarve Mana Krishna Padara Vilayo. May my mind always focus at the lotus feet. So, if you want to succeed spiritually, don't place full confidence in the mind. The mind is considered to be the mind is considered to be your worst enemy if it is not controlled. And the mind is considered to be your friend if it is controlled. So what are the great sages telling us? Mind is restless, so don't make friends with it. And if we place full confidence in the mind, it will cheat us at any moment. So you may say, if I'm not going to listen to my mind, who do I listen to? You should listen to the purified mind. When the mind becomes purified, then it's okay. But at the moment, our mind is highly contaminated. And therefore, don't listen to the restless, polluted, contaminated mind. If you listen to that, your spiritual life will be spoiled. Just like if you're sitting on an unbridled horse. Unbridled horse means a horse on which you don't have control in the reins. So if you're sitting on an unbridled horse and the horse is galloping, then you can be thrown off the horse at any time, isn't it? So that is the danger of following an uncontrolled mind. So in the purport, Prabhupada says, the first business of one trying to advance in spiritual life is to control the mind and senses. This point gets emphasized again and again. Which point? Controlling the mind and senses. There are so many so-called spiritual preachers in society today. But if you analyze their speeches, you will find that there is very little emphasis on controlling the mind and senses. Why? Because they're scared. If they talk about tapasya, austerity, penances, then nobody will listen. But the scriptures clearly establish one must control the mind and senses. And this point gets emphasized again and again by spiritual authorities. Because if you don't control your mind and senses, you will not be able to get purified. And therefore, we need to take part in spiritual activities to purify them. The mind and the senses need engagement. It's not that you can tell the mind to just keep quiet. You have to engage the mind positively. If you engage the mind negatively, then the mind is your worst enemy. But if you engage the mind positively, then the mind can also become your best friend. So the first business to advance in spiritual life is to control the mind and senses. Therefore, Rupa Goswami, in the Sri Upadesharmit, Rupa Goswami was instructed by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to write books on the philosophy of devotional service. And he gave us many wonderful books that Prabhupada translated, two of the most important books, which were Nectar of Devotion and Nectar of Instruction. So in Sri Upadesharmit, Rupa Goswami says, Vacha Vegam Manasa Krodha Vegam Jeeva Vegam Udara Pastha Vegam. Rupa Goswami clearly says that if you want to advance spiritually, you must control the mind and the senses. So the Prabhupada goes on to talk about this point, that one must control the mind and senses. And in the previous verse, Prabhupada quotes that famous verse from the 18th chapter of Gita, where Krishna says, three things should never be given up: yajna, dana, and tapasya. Lord Rishabdev, in giving instructions in the 5th chapter, has emphasized the word tapo again and again. For example, he says, tapo devyam putaka yena sattvam. My dear sons, please perform austerities, tapo. For whom? Whom? Devyam, for the pleasure of the Lord. In a way, if you analyze society, the materialists are also performing austerities. To even live in the material world, in the heavily polluted cities, is big tapasya. And then do three jobs, four jobs. But that is tapasya for material goals. So that is not what is recommended. What Lord Rishabdev says, tapo divyam putaka. Perform austerities for the pleasure of the Lord. Now someone may say, if I perform austerities for the pleasure of the Lord, what will I get in exchange? Is there anything to be expected in exchange? Any feedback? Lord Rishabdev gives us the answer. He says, in exchange, you will realize unending spiritual pleasure. Devotees, when they come to Krishna conscious movement, they should not think that if I perform some austerity to achieve success in spiritual life, this austerity will go in vain. No, it will not go in vain. It will give you spiritual pleasure. It will give you unending spiritual pleasure. That confidence must be there. Then when you make some sacrifice to please Krishna, it will not go in vain. You'll get unending spiritual pleasure. So this point gets repeated again and again in the scriptures, just like Chaitanya Mahaprabhu explains what's one of the benefits of chanting the Hare Krishna mantra. He says, Ananda Bhudi Vardhanam. If you chant the holy names of Krishna sincerely, then it will give you unending spiritual pleasure. So what is being emphasized here is the need to control the mind, the need to engage the mind positively. The mind needs engagement. Prabhupada has made this point hundreds of times in his lectures. The mind needs engagement. But how do you engage the mind? We need to engage the mind positively. If we don't learn to engage the mind positively, then there will be trouble. Now Krishna gives us so many examples of engaging the mind positively. For example, Krishna says again and again, Man mana bhava mad bhakto madhyaji man namaskaro. Think of me, bow down to me, offer homage to me, become my devotee. Krishna is saying that, think of me. And he has made that point many times. Why? Because Krishna knows the mind needs engagement. The mind cannot operate in vacuum. Our philosophy is the mind and the senses, they all need engagement. But we need to engage them positively. Just like Krishna talks in the Bhagavad Gita of the austerities of the body, mind and words. With regards to the body, Krishna says, engage the body in service to the Lord. Engage the body in service to the Brahmanas. Practice non-violence. Practice celibacy. Practicing celibacy means that even if you are in a Grihastha ashram, you live according to Grihastha principles, not for sense enjoyment. And one who lives according to Grihastha principles is practicing celibacy. Practice non-violence. So Krishna explains. Then Krishna also explains the austerities of the tongue. What's the austerity of the tongue? Krishna says, one of the austerity of the tongue is to regularly recite Vedic literature, to chant the holy names, to abstain from prachalpa, to speak words that are truthful, but to speak words in a palatable manner. In other words, when we speak, we should speak in a palatable way, not in a very insulting, offensive way. Krishna also explains the austerities of the mind. Engage the mind positively. So, the point that is being made here is don't listen to the restless mind. Don't listen to the polluted mind. Control your mind and senses. Perform austerities. Austerity means we voluntarily give up what is detrimental for spiritual advancement and we accept what is conducive for spiritual advancement. This was explained very nicely by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu when he was explaining to Sanatana Goswami the six principles of Sharanagati. Sharanagati means to surrender. Rupa and Sanatana at one time were both holding very important positions, but then they both withdrew from government service. And Lord Chaitanya instructed Rupa Goswami in Prayag and later on Sanatana Goswami on the process of surrender. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu listed six factors. One, first one was to accept what is favorable for spiritual advancement and to reject what is unfavorable for spiritual advancement. So the learned scholars are giving us very useful information. The problem is we don't take advantage of this information. If we were to take advantage of this information, then there's no question of not succeeding on the spiritual path. Therefore, the spiritual advice we get is Shastra Chakshu. See everything through the eyes of the scriptures. Then you're bound to succeed. So, what is being said is, don't listen to the restless mind. Don't make friends with your mind when it is restless. If the mind is in control, if the mind is positive, then you can make friends with the mind. But if the mind is restless, then don't make control. And the mind is trying to cheat us all the time. The mind is trying to mislead us. But we still place maximum faith in the mind. We say, no, I want to do this. My mind says I should do this. Don't place faith in the mind. If you place your faith in a turbulent mind, then your spiritual life is doomed. So therefore, Prabhupada is making the point in the purport again and again and again that practice austerities, control the mind and the senses. And Prabhupada says, how can this be controlled? This can be controlled by offenseless chanting of the holy name. Chanting of the holy name is beneficial in any situation. But if we want to cleanse the heart, chetu darpan marjanam, we want the anarthas to be cleansed, then not only should we chant the holy name, but we should chant the holy name offensively. There are three stages of chanting the holy name. The offensive stage, the stage of minimizing offenses, and purified stage. So Prabhupada in the purport is talking about being offenseless in chanting. That means being attentive in chanting, avoiding the 10 offenses. And the quality of chanting is good, then the cleansing of the heart will be very fast. And as the cleansing takes place, you can also engage the mind positively. So it is important that we not only chant our rounds, but we also chant our rounds offensively. Now, we made the point that the mind needs engagement. And in this verse, there's reference to Subari Muni. You heard of Subari Muni? He was a very powerful yogi. He was living underwater, like the modern-day submarines do. They don't have yogis anymore who can live underwater. So now they have invented the submarine. The submarine goes so deep underwater and it has all the facilities you need for living. Usually the Navy has submarines so that they can carry weapons and shoot and nobody can detect them. But they have submarines and then they have detection devices by which you can track down the submarines. Just like in these Western countries like America, everyone has a device in the car that tells you if a policeman is standing ahead to see if you're not going beyond the speed limit. But then the police people have radars by which they can see from a distance the car is over speeding, so stop them. But then at the same time they have anti-radar equipment. So you have that in your car, it gives a beep, beep, beep. That means the police is standing ahead of them. Slow. So what they do, they just slow down. So it's a funny case in the material world, isn't it? On the one hand, they have devices by which you can track down if somebody is over-speeding. And on the other hand, they permit you to sell devices that can check you from doing what you're supposed to do. So they have these submarines. So Subari Muni was a yogi, very powerful yogi. But then being underwater, he saw two fishes mating. And he started meditating on the joys of sex life. And as a result, his austerity was broken. He surfaced on the earth and he approached a local king, the king of Mathura. He had 50 daughters, the king. He said, I'd like to marry one of your daughters. But the king saw Subari Muni was so ugly. Long beard, long nails, long hair. In his heart, he didn't want to give his daughter in marriage to an ugly man. So he very diplomatically said, if my daughters want to marry you, I have no problem. But I'm not going to force them to marry you. So when Subari Muni went to the palace where the 50 daughters were reciting, they all saw him and shut the door. Ugly. So Swaramuni was a very powerful yogi. He knew that they have rejected him because of his ugly looks, long hair. And he knew this was there because, you know, he was practicing deep austerities in the water, in the Yamuna. So he said, okay, I'm going to teach them a lesson. I'm going to show them my mystic powers. So by his yogic powers, he became a very handsome young man. In fact, most handsome man on the planet. And then, when the 50 sisters saw this young, handsome man, they all said, I should marry him. The other one said, no, I selected him before you. I'm going to marry him. And the third one said, no, I saw before both of you, so I should. So Swaramuni could see that the sisters who were so friendly with each other and they were all fighting to get him as their husband, so he married all 50 of them. And he had 100 more sons from each of them, with powerful yogi. But he could see that, and by his chanting of mantras, he could create very opulent palaces. And he created very opulent palaces. So opulent that his father-in-law said, his father-in-law was very proud that I'm a powerful king. But then the father-in-law said, boy, my son-in-law's palaces are better than my palace. He became more humble. But Swaramuni realized, even after all this opulence, etc., that he's not finding real happiness. He saw, he had all the facilities for sense enjoyment, but he was still unhappy. And he began to lament, why did I get attracted to the meeting of the fishes and start meditating on that? And this has caused my downfall. So he decided to not do this anymore. Then he took vanaprastha, went to the forest to again practice extreme austerities. And his 50 wives, they were loyal to their husband. They all followed him to the forest and they all performed austerities. So this story is there, of course, there's an explanation that Swaramuni fell down from his deep meditation because he had once offended Garuda. He had prevented Garuda from eating a fish by giving the fish shelter. But nevertheless, this story goes to illustrate every story in the Srimad Bhagavatam has a purport, has a theme, has a message for the conditioned soul. And one of the lessons you get from Swaramuni is he just started meditating on the meeting of fishes, and his spiritual life got smashed. Therefore, we should practice the art of positive thinking. In the material world, they do talk about positive thinking. But what they mean by positive thinking is, hey, think, be ambitious, think how you can make more money, think how you can get more sense enjoyment. That is called positive thinking in the material world. If you go for a job interview and you don't sound very ambitious, they don't give you a job in America. You have to sound as if you're going to take over the whole world. So they call that the art of positive thinking. But for a spiritualist, positive thinking means engaging the mind positively. Just like when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu went to just wait till the bell comes. Just like when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu converted the staunch impersonalist Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya to the path of personalism. And then he was headed for South India. And as he was heading for South India, his devotee Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya told him, in the South he'll meet a great devotee called Ramananda Roy, who at that time was the governor of South India, Tamil Nadu, Madras. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu met Ramananda Roy. Where? Who knows? On the banks of the river Godavari. ISKCON has a nice temple there. And the Lord asked him many questions. One of the questions the Lord asked him is, what should a living entity constantly think about? And what did Ramananda Roy say? Think about the form of the Lord, the pastimes, the qualities, and the pastimes of the Lord. So there are many wonderful pastimes of the Lord. And one of the pastimes of the Lord is this pastime of Chandaniyatra. The Chandaniyatra is actually a very old pastime. At one time, Lord Jagannath had told King Indradumna to perform this pastime, and the Chandaniyatra proper program first started in Jagannath Puri, where they would put chandan on the body of Lord Jagannath, but just leave the eyes open so Lord Jagannath could see. But in our line, this pastime was first exhibited by the great sage Madhavendra Puri. Madhavendra Puri was the spiritual grandfather of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's spiritual master was Ishwara Puri, and his spiritual master was Madhavendra Puri. Madhavendra Puri was a very advanced devotee. He was always engaged in worshipping the Lord, chanting the names of the Lord, meditating on the Lord, and he would not even eat anything unless somebody offered it to him. Not like us. Come on, I must have breakfast, lunch, dinner. Otherwise, I must have it at the right time. He would never ask anyone for anything. So once Madhavendra Puri had completed his parikram of Govardhan, and he was just resting at Govinda Kund. When you do the Govardhan parikram, and when you come to Govinda Kund, the Pandas normally tell you, this was Madhavendra Puri's baithak, isn't it? So after doing parikram, he sat down at Govinda Kund. And as he sat down there, there was a very handsome boy who came with a pot of milk and told the handsome boy, and told the sage, I know that you're hungry. Take this milk from me. And I will go and take milk my cows. Then I'll come back and take this glass, this pot. So Madhavendra Puri said, how did you know that I'm hungry and thirsty? And the village boy said, the ladies were going to take the water from the well. Seeing your face, they could realize that you were hungry. So this is this milk. Please drink the milk and I will come back and take this pot. Madhavendra Puri was struck by the beauty of this boy. He had never seen such a handsome boy. And he had never heard such a beautiful, melodious voice. Everything that Krishna does is outstanding, isn't it? He drank the milk. And he dozed off, slept. He waited for the boy to return to take the pot. The boy never came. And he dozed off to sleep a little bit, like some of you doze off in the Bhagavatam class. But you're dozing off early in the morning. Your mother Puri had done the Govardhan Parikrama.